Hey guys, welcome to the Brain and Brand Show. I'm your host, Timothy Maurice, your behavioral psychology author. And I'm always delighted to be able to have a conversation with a brilliant scientist who gives us a little bit of insight to help us advance and accelerate our lives. Before I dive into this conversation with my guest today, I just want to say thank you for everybody who's been following over the past decade and for those who share these episodes. Big shout out to you. It really means a lot. So I am joined by Marcus Stevenson. Marcus, are you a neuroscientist?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for having me, by the way.
Yeah, it's really good. Thank you so much for joining us. You're putting out research at the Sainsbury Wellcome Center, am I correct?
Yeah, that's where we are.
Awesome. Please say hi to your colleagues. I've had a few of them on the show. Say hi to Sonia and the rest of the team there. Do you guys work on research together, you and Sonia?
Me and Sonia, not particularly, but yeah, there's a lot of collaboration in the building.
Okay, a lot of collaboration. Lovely, lovely. Tell us a little bit about, tell us real quick before I go into our Inside the Mind feature, which I cannot wait for. Tell me a little bit about your journey into neuroscience.
So I guess it all started at the end of my undergrad, which was in neuroscience at university. I just wanted to leave the country and go somewhere. And I realized someone's going to pay me to go and do science in another country. I was like, it's fantastic. So when it became fantastic. Never expected to stay in science. Just thought it'd be a fun to go and live in Sweden at the time. But then realized I wasn't bad at it and I really liked it. So ever since, went to New York, did my postdoc, and then now back in London. So taking me all over the world, but yeah, love it.
Nice, nice. Awesome. Well, before we go into our conversation where we look at sort of neuroscience of habits and the implications thereof, I have to go inside your mind. We need to pull back your brain to get to know you a little bit. So we have a fun feature called Inside Your Mind where I'm going to ask you 7 either or type of questions so the audience can figure out, put a finger on the pulse of who you are. Can we do that?
Yeah, sounds great.
All right, here we go. Number one, painting or sculpting?
Oh, painting, I'd say. I'm not a good artist, so I didn't either, but I like painting.
Number two, reading or writing?
Reading.
Nice, nice. Reading, wait, would you say reading on a tablet or reading an actual paper?
I'm getting more back into the habit of reading paper, and it's I can focus a lot more.
Okay. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
India or China?
Oh, fascinating places. Let's go for China.
Number five, hiking or swimming?
Swimming.
Now, this one is very tricky. Number six is very tricky. Samsung or Apple?
Samsung.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then lastly, this may be one of the most challenging questions you've been asked in a very long time. Right brain or left brain?
Yeah, left brain, but I don't believe in the right brain, left brain thing.
Yeah. In fact, this is a great segue into our conversation. I mean, the whole right brain, left brain thing has new research is starting to debunk this idea, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think almost, a lot of people who work on neuroscience, like in a mechanistic level and down on the cells and things like this, realize that like ultimately there's like, yeah, both hemispheres look almost identical. And there are, of course, slight specialities, but ultimately the decisions we make and the actions we take are an integrated output of both hemispheres.
Got it. Well, thank you for allowing us to go inside your mind. So you're working on some groundbreaking research that looks at why habits are so hard to break. Give us a snapshot of this research.
Yeah, so we were looking into a chemical called dopamine in the brain and try to understand how this makes habits in the brain, and it's been linked to all kinds of things. You might have heard of dopamine being like
Yeah.
addictions, or dopamine detoxes, or all these, the pleasure chemical in the brain, these kind of things. But what we basically have shown recently is that there's two kinds of dopamine system, a movement-based and a reward-based. And it's this movement-based dopamine signal that actually causes habits or causes you to be have like repetitive behaviors.
So wait, Mark, just quickly. So the two types of dopamine, this is the first time I'm hearing this. So you've got the movement-based type of dopamine, and you have the explain the other one.
Yeah, so the one that probably people are most familiar with, and this is what actually most people thought, is that dopamine is thought to be a pleasure molecule. So whenever you have something which is a positive experience in your life, your kind of brain's gonna get flooded with dopamine. And this is gonna teach you that, oh, this was a great outcome. And what you think of is this is teaching you to do this again, right? So every time you eat a sandwich you really like, you're like, oh, I'm definitely gonna pick that again. I really like that. So that's what classically dopamine is thought to do.
Yes.
But now what we found out as well is every time you do an action, there's also dopamine is flooding your brain, independent of if it's good or bad. It's just dopamine is telling you that, like, oh, there's an action happening.
Oh, wow.
So I think the implications are that, like, we found this new way that the brain might be learning. So one set of dopamine is teaching you basically like how much you like something, and that's teaching you basically like should you do this again or not. Another system is teaching you like how often you've done something. So that's what the movement system is doing, is teaching you how often you've taken a decision in your past and stamping in like a frequency-based system.
So, well, before we go further, let's give these two. So, we've got one that's called the kind of action movement dopamine, and the other one we would give the name pleasure dopamine. Is that significant? I mean, is that would that be correct, or should we broaden and give it a different label?
So the technical term is a reward prediction error, but we can
Okay.
think of it as reward-based or value-based.
Okay, reward, value, and then others, action, movement.
Exactly.
Okay, this will be helpful for anyone that's kind of new to neuroscience, anyone who's come into this conversation just fascinated by trying to break a habit. We can at least have a framework. Okay, great.
Exactly. So what we showed in like that these two systems work together. So I think the best way to think about this is, if you think about where you go for lunch, right? So I'm in London, I go to Pret to pick up a sandwich. And the first time I went there, you got all these different options, right? And I might pick one because it looks nice, try the sandwich. If I really like it, I'm more likely to choose it again. If I don't like it, if it's a taste I don't like, I'm less likely. And all those decisions, that's all your value-based system. It's like, if you like it, do it again. If you don't like it, do less often. That's all your value dopamine telling you that, right? But then what we found is a sneaky thing happens. And the sneaky thing is this, right? If I keep going to the same sandwich shop and I keep picking the chicken sandwich because I really like it, over time, you have a different system, which is what we call the frequency-based learning system. That's driven by this movement dopamine. And what that's doing is not learning what do I like, it's learning how often have I picked a sandwich. So now every time I go into Pret, it's telling me like, well, you always do the chicken sandwich, right? So I don't know, I no longer have to think about all the options and calculate what the value is and which one I like the most. I can have a default strategy, just pick what I've done in the past, which is pick the most common sandwich I always choose, which is the chicken sandwich. So
So this is interesting because so if that dopamine is kind of helping the neurons fire or supporting it, and is it creating a pathway? Is this dopamine supporting the construction of a pathway or not?
yeah, that's exactly what it's doing. So both the value dopamine and this movement dopamine, they're exactly doing that. They're shaping pathways in your brain to make it more likely for information to flow in a certain way. So
Wow.
yeah, that's exactly what they're doing.
Wow. So every time, Pret, it's funny, Pret, I'm based in South Africa here, and Pret just came to South Africa. So this is kind of a funny analogy you're using.
Yeah, I didn't know if it would be there.
And so it's interesting you mention it because I'm so used to Pret in New York when I'm in New York or London. having vegan options because I'm a vegan. And so when I went into Pret in South Africa, they have very little vegan. The veganism is not that popular. I don't know, stress chemicals, cortisol would
Right.
like was raging inside of me because of I'm like the association and the pathway I have is Pret has lots of vegan options.
Exactly. So that exactly, I think that's often when you have this conflict between your habit system and then what you actually find as the outcome, right? And like that's what people have, right? When they're not exactly in the same way, but if you end up doing this habit and this default system and it doesn't lead to the outcome you want, they cause a lot of conflict and people get really agitated about this.
So ultimately, your dopamine is firing and habits become very difficult to break because, or new habits difficult to form because you have these pathways towards a particular action, activity, behavioral, a set of behaviors. And so let's say your dopamine has been action towards sitting on the couch watching Netflix. Now, all of a sudden, you want to change and start going to gym. Let's talk about the conflict and the tension between what your desired goals are and what these dopamine pathways have created.
Yeah, exactly, right? So in that case, you've got a conflict between your value-based system, which is saying, oh, I really want to get trim and lose weight, go to the gym. I don't want to be lazy and sit there and watch Netflix. But if you've always sat there and watched Netflix, well, that's the common thing for you to do. You've now got a conflict between these systems, right? Your frequency-based system is saying, watch Netflix, because that's what you always do. And your value-based system is saying, well, I want to go to the gym and lose weight, right? And so now you've got these two decision-making systems in the brain which are in conflict. And actually, the habit system usually wins because it's usually stronger. So dopamine has like strengthened this pathway so much of what. And it's also quicker, right? So the reason you form habits and the reason they're good for you, normal, beneficial habits, is because they allow you to automate your behavior. So you can think about learning to drive a car. It was very, very difficult initially, but then you learn automatically how to like steer, change gear, brake, etc. So habits drive our automatic behavior normally, so they're very beneficial. But if they become such default policies, it's incredibly hard to break because they are these like efficient, automatic fast systems.
Yeah, but let's talk about that because this is important. So if I'm sitting on the couch, let's remove the word lazy because my understanding of, like there are theories like the immunity to change theory and so forth that really have shed insight for me about just how difficult change is at times. So if I'm sitting on the couch, I'm watching Netflix, that dopamine that has created this pathway that links the reward to Netflix and the couch is incredibly strong because it's adding real value, right? Maybe you've had a difficult day. Maybe you seek solace. Maybe it's emotional healing. Whatever the case is, that system where dopamine is flowing that links the couch and you is often underestimated. The power of it is often underestimated. Am I right?
Yeah, you're totally right. Look, only one other thing is that basically this, if you develop a habit of watching Netflix on your sofa, initially you're absolutely spot on, right? That the reason you'll do that is because it was giving you some value, right? You're like, this is comfort, this is entertaining, this is exciting, all those things are the initial reason why you start watching Netflix. But what's we found out what was surprising is everyone thinks that's the system for learning, but in the background, every time you watch Netflix, every time you sit down on the sofa and tune into Netflix, your frequency-based system is going to be like, oh, okay, every time I sit down on the sofa, I watch Netflix one, two, three, four, five, etc. times. And then when you sit down, it's not going to be your value-based system that's driving this. You pick up the controller and turn on Netflix, not because it's the thing that you feel will give you the most value, but because it's automatically what you've done in the past. So when you come to the gym example, and you're like, well, actually, what I really want to do is, go to the gym. who now have an automatic system which is not doesn't have any access to this information about what your value is and what your intentions are, what your goals are. He just does the automatic strategy. It's like, well, it is a different part of your brain that's just telling you, turn on Netflix. So now you have this conflict between your intended goal and your drive and your what you think will give you value and pleasure versus your automatic system, which is this just like well-grained strengthened pathway in the brain of like linking the context to the action. I sit on sofa, I turn on Netflix.
So I want to unpack this. Let's stay here for a moment, and you're gonna please indulge me for a bit. Like I'm
Sure.
about to go on a little bit of a tangent, so just stay with me. So this is gonna seem super random, but just so the hedonic treadmill is something I'm particularly fascinated by. The
Right.
idea that let's use a simple example. You're single. You go out on a date with a potential partner. You're super excited about them. Dopamine is flowing. And the first time you see this person nude, your entire in your chemicals explode in your mind,
Right.
That a cocktail of chemicals, including dopamine, explodes. Now, fast forward to 5 years. You've seen this person 600 times. Let's talk through this from a neuroscience perspective. The
Okay.
first time, the level of flow of chemicals, hormones, dopamine flowing through your brain versus the 600th time you saw them. The hedonic treadmill says that each time this flow and this intensity goes down just a little, marginally. And by the time you've seen it, this person 600 times, you have to find your pleasure somewhere else, not from the sight of this person's nude body. Can you unpack this a little bit from a neuroscience perspective?
It's interesting. So you're entirely right, right? Because we're learning through, it doesn't matter if it's this value-based movement, it's all through prediction errors, right? So the first time you're excited because it's new and it's just like so surprising and it's just like amazing. And like you said, dopamine will be flooding through your system. And you're right that over time it'll become more and more predictable. So you'll get less and less of that dopamine being released and less of this rush. But it's not to say it's less exciting because as you get all this dopamine, you get more and more strengthening of the value of this, right? So, what you're doing, learning these pathways you're establishing in this value-based system, it's just like the predicted value of something, right? So, yes, it'll be less exciting and less novel and less unpredictable at the beginning, but the value that you associate with that will get stronger and stronger over time, right? So, the excitement and the ex unexpected nature of that, will get smaller over time, but the value of just like that experience will.
Yeah, so it's a different type of reward. So the one reward, let's contrast the two, because I do think if people get this and they really understand this, it could be a major breakthrough. So the first time you see them, there is a pleasure value. The second, by the 600th time, there is a habitual safety value. And we often seek the pleasure adventure value in so much part of our lives that we seek that pleasure value out, and we often confuse that for love. We often confuse that feeling as why we chase something, why we want something. And the more mature person in that 600th time goes, this person is still beautiful. Yes, my body is not tingling, but it's a different level of safety and reward. There's a different sense of quality in what I'm feeling now. And being able to understand those two different responses and flows in your brain, I think is important because I do think this new generation is chasing new stimuli versus established stimuli, established quality relations. We're chasing newness because news feeds and social media algorithms are just pumping new stimuli, new pleasure.
Yeah, it was fun. You're totally right. And like, not only that, they're creating a habit where basically just like you will constantly go and check out this new stimuli. But interestingly, it's not because it's giving you value, right? It's because you just that's what you've always done in the past, right? So if you talk to people who are like scrolling through their feeds and things like this, like, you know, are they getting a lot of pleasure and all these things from it? Like, I think people would say actually not as much as you'd expect, right? They're really doing it because it's just the automatic what they've done in the past, right? So I think actually like these algorithms that people have developed to get you to go look for these new stimuli, actually what they've been really smart about doing is just creating the link between stimulus and context, right? So like if you think about scrolling on your phone, right, why is that so effective at creating a habit? Because you create the pairing between see something and swipe it, see something and swipe it, see something and swipe it, right? And that pairing of the context and the action is exactly what we've been showing is what drives habits, right? And so you initially go there for the content, right, and the pictures and for the excitement and what's new, but you stay because of the content of just like you get trapped basically in terms of just like see something, swipe something, see something, swipe something. And it's that which is retaining you from doing these things. So
Yeah. So this is interesting because then the question becomes this is fascinating. So the fulfillment is just in the motion, not necessarily in the deeper intrinsic fulfillment. It's just in the going back and swiping. It's not necessarily I'm getting anything from it. I could actually be numb to the deeper intrinsic feeling.
definitely. That's exactly what we show. So basically, when you get into this automatic way of behaving, you're not going there because it has any value for you, right? You're going there just because that's what you've done in the past, right? So
Okay.
you're entirely correct. You're totally numb to the reason. And that's why you might have this big conflict. You're like, oh, actually, I don't want to spend all my time scrolling, but you're going to have a real trouble not doing that because you've got this other way your brain is teaching you, which is like you've always done that, do that again.
Got it. And so, you know, when we go back to the earlier example of having, you know, in a relationship with someone, on some level, it's kind of good that after experiencing someone 600 times, there is a habit form. Maybe from an evolutionary biological perspective, that there is some strong association needed to create a sustainable relationship. Like at the end of the day, we need that come home, see my partner, come home, see my partner, come home, see the same person that creates that bond. It's just challenging when the output or the kind of pleasure output is you almost become sort of too comfortable where you don't get that certain type of stimuli you did when you first met the person. Are you following me?
Yeah, I totally am following you. And like, yeah. Like I'm married, I've been married for a long time, so I totally know what you're talking about. I think that's like, yeah, like how do you satiate these two systems, right? I think is one
Yes.
of the questions, right? And I think, yeah, in some way, like, you know, you've got to find ways to basically like keep the habits or keep the default things, but like make them work for you. And you know, maybe like I don't know, like trying to find new exciting ways or
Yes,
things with your
and
partner.
not seek the excitement in the same way because the brain is not wired to keep. Imagine if every single time you saw your partner for 600 times, you responded the exact same way you did the first time. That's not normal. That's almost psychotic.
Exactly.
Okay, so when forming, let's shift the conversation a bit to talk about the desire to build a new habit. What are you up against? What are you, some of your findings? If you're trying to build a new habit and you're contending with an old negative habit, what is, did you go that far in your research?
So we didn't go that far in the research, but it's people have taken the what we found and created theories, and then theories you can
Yeah, let's unpack a
model.
couple of those theories.
So the theory here basically is just, using this action prediction system, why is it so hard to form a new habit? Or go, why is it so hard to break a bad habit that you have and form a new one on top of it? So it's really because it's this frequency-based system, right? So if you've, watched Netflix when you sit on the sofa like 300 times, and now you go to the gym one time, right? You've got no chance, right? The habitual system has no chance. It's one against 300, right? And so the only way to really break a habit is to replace it with something else, right? There's no such thing as basically like getting rid of a habit. Yeah, technically that's just the way that this dopamine works. With the pleasure dopamine, right? You have good and bad. So you can either make something more likely or less likely. The movement dopamine system is just one unidirectional. It's just like you either did or you did not. But it only goes in one direction. So habits are only, you only form habits, you never lose habits. So
Got it.
you have to understand that to understand like you're never going to be able to break your bad habit. Like it's never going away. That's in your brain for life, right? But you can change it by overcome, like overriding it with a new habit, if you see my
Yeah,
point.
that's why I always tell people there's no such thing as unlearning. What you're
Yeah.
doing is learning new
Exactly.
new formulas, new systems, new patterns, right?
Exactly. So if you want to form a new habit, let's say you want to go to the gym, there's really established lots of human research on this. But now it makes sense in the context of what we're finding, right? What you need to do is you need to consistently do the same thing in the same context over and over again, right? So if you like, at the same, if you wanted to form a habit of going to the gym, right? Going to the gym at the same time every day or in the same sequence of events, you're much more likely to form that habit than if you like did it on different days and at different times. So you need to pair a specific context with a specific action, right? So if you want to create a habit of going to the gym, you need to be like, on Wednesdays at 10 o'clock, I'm going to go, right? And if you can keep that up for a certain period of time, and I think the magic number is people have done research about 50 times. If you can do this 50 times in the same context, you're going to form a habit and it's going to become automatic, right?
Yeah,
But
that's powerful.
it's the consistency, but it has to be the consistency between context and action. So if you can create that consistency, you can break any habit and form any positive one you like.
Wow, this is amazing because this is why I enjoy the kind of partnership with your research institute. Because as this research is coming out, I want people to understand that when people speak about habits, we speak about breaking habits, we speak about building your next self and leading at the next level, that this is underpinned by good science. So we really appreciate the work you guys are doing out there. Thank you so much. Where can we find more of your work and your research?
So we're in new labs, so more will be coming soon. We've got some stuff about dreams and things coming up. Just the Sages Welcome Center is where a lot of this stuff is coming out from. So just keep tuned to what's coming from there.
Nice. Well, say hi to again to your colleagues. Keep up the good work out there. I'm looking forward to sharing these insights with so many people who have dreams and goals, and they need habits to help them get there. So thank you so much, Dr. Marcus Stevenson Jones. I really,
Thanks,
really appreciate
Timothy.
it.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.